Did you know that women comprised only 18% of directors working on the top 250 domestic grossing films of 2020, and that women accounted for only 17% of writers? That means that 7 out of 10 times when we watch a film, we're watching a story written from a male point of view. We'll discuss this and other interesting facts about women writers in Hollywood with screenwriter Katherine Atkinson on this episode of The Curious Professor. Everyone, I'm Dr. B. Welcome to the Curious Professor podcast, where I take listeners on a journey of discovery to explore the people, places, artifacts, and natural wonders that spark my curiosity. On this episode of the Curious Professor podcast, we'll explore the transition from journalism to screenwriting and the obstacles faced by older female writers in Hollywood with Katherine Atkinson. But first, a trivia question. Who made history in 2021 by earning the most Academy Award nominations for a woman in a single year? I'll have the answer for you at the end of this episode. I'm thrilled to have Katherine Atkinson on the show today. Katherine is a writer of thrillers and dramas. She has 6 scripts and 1 series on the go right now, and her aim is to write, market, and sell them. Katherine has been optioned 3 times and made 1 short. The Catch came out in 2017 and was a finalist in a Canadian competition that saw it screened in front of 1,500 people. She's also worked for Bronze Studios and been a script reader for over 6 years. Katherine has been a journalist for over 25 years, winning 12 awards. She moved to the UK and worked as a journalist there for 15 years, including 4 on the staff of The Guardian. She has also worked for the Globe and Mail in Canada, and her work has appeared in MSNBC Online, Elle Magazine, and Time. After returning to Canada, Katherine was focused on raising her son and pulling her screenwriting skills together. Her adventure thriller, Run Angelita, was a quarter finalist for the 2020 Page International Competition. It currently has a Coverfly rating of the top 14% of all action projects. When I found out about Katherine's diverse background and work, my curiosity was immediately piqued and I wanted to learn more. I hope this interview with Katherine will spark your curiosity too. Welcome to the show, Katherine. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for asking me.
You've worked as a journalist for over 25 years. What have you found most rewarding about the profession?
I've been really fortunate to have an extremely varied career on 2 continents. So when I left university in Canada, I grew up on the Canadian prairies just north of North Dakota. So when I finished university, I moved to the UK. And the idea was I had dual citizenship. I was born there. And the idea was I couldn't afford journalism school. So I thought I'd give it a crack and see what I could do. And within a year, I was working for the national press there. And I ended up staying for 15 years. So I was super lucky to be working at that level. The training is out of this world. And I ended up getting my journalism school training while I was there. Came back to Canada in 2003 and worked for large papers and small papers as a writer. So I've been an editor, a writer, a photographer, super varied. I've done some foreign correspondence work, and I never get tired of that aspect of it. It would be like filmmaking in that sense that it's a lot of variety. You meet amazing people. And
What brought you back to Canada?
What I would say at the height of my career there at that point, I was a staff journalist at The Guardian newspaper as an editor, also writing for them sometimes, working with some outstanding people. And what actually happened was 9/11. So, 9/11 obviously has such a tremendous impact and in the hearts and minds of Americans, but it was also a very big thing internationally. And I was working in The Guardian that day. What happened in London was that the city shut down because there were dozens of bomb threats. I had to go grab my son from nursery school he was in at the time. And it was chaos that day. So it had an enormous impact all over the place. And afterwards, people like myself who were from other countries, including at The Guardian, a load of us started thinking, where do we want to be? We felt that London was, you know, was a target. And of course, it has been attacked. So my husband at the time and I, you know, reviewed what our options were, and we decided to come to Canada. So that's the story. It's quite a big one, really.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. I think it's important to give people an understanding of, you know, why move back? It seemed like things were going real well for you in the UK. Why make that decision to move back?
I mean, there were a lot of reasons too. I miss this country. I love it. I miss North America. And I wanted to come back.
And then you've decided to make the transition to screenwriting. What brought about that decision for you?
It was, it's been a part of my life for a long time, writing for performance. I have a master's degree that I got in the UK in playwriting. I got that in 1998, and I've had a few productions over there, and I love live performance or acted performance. If you like, I write prose all the time. So the idea of people acting out action, it's just something that appeals to me in terms of storytelling. And I believe that you can hit different kinds of truths in fiction that as a news writer, you're more restricted. So I just love it. I, as far back as 5 years old, I can remember wanting to write fiction and stories.
Have you also dabbled in maybe short stories or long form novels?
I have one novel done, totally unpublished at this point. I wanted to focus on film. I write short stories. I find short story the best form to translate into screenwriting because it's less busy. There's less to leave out. So I like it a lot as a form.
Let's talk a little bit about your screenplay, Run Angelita. It's about a migrant teen who breaks out of a Texas internment camp only to be hunted by an assassin who thinks she stole $100 million from his cartel. What inspired you to write that story?
Well, I am very interested in the worldwide problems that refugees are enduring, and I have been for a long time. It, you know, it came to me as a journalist. I'm an immigrant. I was born in the UK. We emigrated when I was two. So apart from my skin tone, which is extremely pale, and the fact that my father was a glass cutter, a working class guy, who's a person who wouldn't be able to emigrate to Canada today. They look for people with money and education levels that are a lot higher than his were at the time. So I had that awareness. And then you see what other immigrants endure because they don't look like me. I've always been interested in it in terms of journalism, which is a lot more abstract. But in the 90s, I went to Yugoslavia to cover the war. And what I found when I was in Belgrade was really interesting and disturbing, which was that Belgrade was a sort of central Eastern European center point for people who were trying to get into Western Europe, people who were coming from Asia, different parts of Asia. And it stunned me. These people were in Belgrade and they were waiting for something to happen. They were waiting for an opportunity. And it was clear to me that nobody does that unless they're desperate. They can't stay at home for whatever reason. Could be violence, could be war, could be civil breakdown. And I've been wanting to pay attention to that ever since. So Run Angelita came out of watching what was happening on the southern border of the U.S. And I actually did a story at one time a few years back in Washington State. And I was sent there by a press agency to talk to people, Minutemen, who were on the border, watching what they thought were going to be dozens and dozens and dozens of foreigners crossing the Canadian-U.S. border. And I interviewed them. There was actually a Canadian there who had gone to the U.S. to do this as well. And it wasn't happening. They were sitting there for hours at a time. The Canada-U.S. border there is quite interesting. No walls, just a road that runs along the border at that place. It was sort of just south of Vancouver. And I found that an interesting experience spending time with them. It was only a day. Slightly scary guys. They treated me very respectfully. And I went back and I wrote the story just really spot straight on news. This is what they're doing. This is why they're doing it. And so that was an opportunity to see that side of the argument. And on the other side, I've spoken to Border Patrol agents, including ones that have retired because they're American ones. that are unhappy about the system. So I'm interested in finding a way through that. Run Angelita is written in a fairly popular way. It's a thriller. It's about a girl who is caught in the middle between the people she's running from her home country, which is El Salvador, and the people on the other side of the border who don't want her there, and the people who are willing to help her. And so I've tried to really make this character led, and I'm at the point now where I'm very happy with where it's going. It was a quarterfinalist for Page last year, and I'm currently waiting to see how it's doing in a couple of others this spring.
You said the novel American Dirt was released when you were writing the first draft of your script. And of course, there was a major controversy that we can talk about around that book and its release, but it centered around the fact that the person who wrote the novel, American Dirt, was not Mexican-American, and she was telling the story of Mexican immigrants. So let's talk about the fact that you're white and that you're located in Canada. You have a British background. So how did you approach writing about a person who came from such a different culture than you?
Looking at American Dirt, and I want to just say up front, I haven't read it. I've read a lot of commentary about it from Latinos in the US, and I think that it's an important conversation to have, and I wanted to pay as much attention to it as possible while I was trying to basically structure at that point the story. I think it is extremely important to, as much as possible, understand the world that you're writing about. And I have been to the border areas. If COVID hadn't happened, I would have gone back. But I had done that drive from Amarillo to San Diego in my life. My family was a big one for traveling by car. So we did a lot of traveling in the US. I haven't done the walk from El Salvador to El Paso, which is what this character endures. So the background I'm bringing to it is going to be a journalist background. And so, which means I researched the heck out of it. And what I wanted to do was get it to this stage where there was a good story. So primarily as a storyteller, I want to tell a good story well. And so, yeah, I want to get the world right. And I believe that there's still work to do in getting it right. And hopefully we will get to the point where that is the word authenticity is a very important one. And I want it to be an authentic story, a respectful story, but also compelling for the people who would come to see it.
Speaking of inspiration, you said you were inspired when you had the opportunity to meet the writers of BlacKkKlansman, Charlie Wachtel and David Rabinovich. Tell me what inspired you when you had the opportunity to speak with them.
So I was the recipient of a Screenwriters Lab grant and came into the Whistler Film Festival in Whistler, Canada, where Charlie and David were speaking, and we got some FaceTime with them. And they told the story of getting BlacKkKlansman made. They worked very closely with the author of the book of his life, and they optioned it. They worked on it about 7 months. One of the great things about Ron Stallworth was he understood, even though it was his own story, that elements of it were going to need to be fictionalized, because telling a story for film and for visual impact is always going to be different. Some cinematic is always different. And he was a very good person to work with from what they said. But their dream was always to get the script into the hands of Spike Lee. They saw it as a Spike Lee film. And by some glorious relationship situation, they had an in with Jordan Peele, and he got the script to Spike Lee. And Spike and his screenwriter, the man he works with so much, is Kevin Wilmot, and they took the script and then they made it a Spike Lee script. So it was like the screenplay had two stages, initial stage and then Spike Lee stage. And the four of them won the Oscar for it a few months after we met. I think about it a lot. I think about how the goodwill behind it and the, you know, consummate storytelling.
I watched a trailer for The Catch. Can you tell us about that project?
The Catch is my first short. We filmed it over a long weekend for a competition, and we were a finalist for that competition. A lot of fun. It was a local one. It was essentially the story of two fishermen catch a creature from the ocean, and it's a creature that's thought to be extinct. So because it's suddenly not extinct, or this one example is caught, it becomes this center of obsession for a lot of people who want to eat it because they consider it an aphrodisiac, because they want to have bragging rights. initially it was a farce, and now I'm thinking it's going to be a thriller. The short was made, and now I'm working on it as a feature.
Let's talk a little bit about the challenges that women face in Hollywood, and particularly sure. middle-aged women. Do you feel like being a woman of a certain age has made it more difficult for you to break into the industry?
I must admit that breaking into the industry is only beginning to happen now. Really, the push has been, say, the last 18 months or so. But it's made me nervous about it, because you see anecdotal evidence everywhere. You see the statistics that are brought out by women in Hollywood and other groups or other organizations. It's not good. And then, you know, when you're older, as well as being a woman, I'm a single mom, and that was my focus for many years. I had to work full time. That was the journalism. And I wrote everything else while I could. And then I've really been able to focus on screenwriting in the last 4 or 5 years. And I try to be optimistic. I try to think my stories have something to say, and I'm good at ignoring naysayers, pretty good. I did have one interesting and disheartening moment on Twitter. I guess if I only have one, I'm doing great. And that was by a well-known screenwriter who, you know, open up for questions. I'm free for half an hour. So I explained my scenario. I explained my age. I didn't even talk about my work, but she told me to write novels instead. And that pissed me off. I'm just going to keep going and see what happens. I get that about 100,000 scripts get written every year, and a couple of hundred get made into films. I think that people, when they go into it, need to be aware of that, but not let it get to them to the point where they stop. This is self-exploration as much as anything else. I think I've been fortunate that journalism isn't always easy either, especially these days. I'm still working in it. I think, you know, the journey is as important as anything else, and I'm trying to focus on that.
Well, it was encouraging this year at the Academy Awards to see so many women nominated, particularly for directing and screenwriting, and to see more mature women who were doing directing and writing.
Yeah, very much so. The way it works is that the more people who get, from whatever background, who get nominated, and if they are representative of different communities and groups, the more likely you are going to see people reach that point. And that's the whole point. There should be room for all of us getting financing, having more than one film that you're directing at a particular level if you're a director. I'm very encouraged by the goodwill and the steps that people are taking, like concrete steps to try and make things different, because we need different kinds of stories. You know, my story should not be the only story that's centered on a person who is a refugee. There's a British film called Pretty Dirty Things, which is set in London. It came out in 2003. It's by Stephen Frears. I watched it again the other day, and it's a very different story from what I'm trying to write, but holy cow, it's amazing. It captures the world in London really well. And I lived there at that time, and I recognize it. So I think there's room, you know, and I think there's interest. There's a market. Let's talk about that. There's a market for these stories.
Well, and when you see a film like Nomadland, you know, winning accolades, you can no longer make the argument, no one wants to see a movie about a middle-aged woman.
Yeah, well, a middle-aged woman who is living in a trailer. We can't all be in Dynasty or anything else that has chandeliers. It's not all about that. We do want escapism, and there's a lot of different kinds of escapism. I get it.
I have a different kind of question next to ask you. If you could invite three famous people living or dead to a dinner party, who would you invite and why?
That was really cool. You know, it's like I have a million different categories and a million different dinner parties. The first person who always comes into my head is John Lennon, but I'm not choosing him. I thought I would choose three women in film who are currently alive and producing amazing work. And the first one is Patricia Riggan, who is a Latina director. She has directed episodes of Jack Ryan and really great action director. And so Lost Angelita is an action thriller. And I would love to be able to talk about that with her. So I was thinking, you know, is this where I'm supposed to say the names of producers and directors I want to work with? My list is too long for that too. Jane Campion, who directed The Piano, and I just admire her work. I think it's top of the lake as well. I think it's just incredibly beautiful. And Kate Winslet, I just really love Mare of Easttown, which was written by a man and directed by a man. Superb, absolutely great story. And I would love to talk to her about her career, about her perspectives, because she certainly doesn't seem to take any nonsense. And she takes interesting roles. I love her to bits, and I always have since I first saw her in a Jane Campion film when she was 17. So that would be a fun dinner.
Yeah, that's great. I love your picks. And I have to agree about Mayor of Easttown. I was very impressed with everything about that show.
Yeah, it was terrific.
So what's one question you wish someone would ask about your work that no one has asked yet?
Where do you sign? No, it's funny. I don't think I'm short of questions. And I'm grateful for anybody who wants to talk about my work. I'm not used to talking about myself. So when you're a reporter or an editor for many years, you're very used to being a conduit, which means you're used to enabling the stories of others to come out. And I believe in that very, very much so. I think probably that comes across today. So talking about myself isn't always the easiest thing. But in terms of my work, I think I probably would love it more as a dialogue. I love getting impressions. I would love a lot of questions about Run Angelita, so because it would help me think. So when I'm asked questions about anything, those are the sort of things I like to have. I love conversations. If that's not a cop-out answer, there are just too many questions I'd love to be able to have a chat with someone about.
And is there anything else you'd like to tell us about you or your work?
I seem to be constantly on the boil. I'm constantly working at it at the moment. And I have a lot of interests. So in terms of myself and my work, I am trying to focus on stories that I think we need to see in the world right now. God knows we're in a mess. So storytelling from a film perspective is about, you know, conflict and messes. And so there's a lot to work with right now. And I would love to be able to contribute to that library of work that's being created. Any opportunity I have for that is something that makes me happy. And yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that right now.
And aren't you working on producing now as well?
Yeah, I was just accepted into the UCLA program for producers, the online program. It's summer professional program. It starts later in June. Totally stoked. You know, I went into this not necessarily thinking about producing. In some ways, it kind of connects with that question about being a woman, being an older woman. And I thought, well, you know, I need to look at how things are financed, how the marketing works, how the business works. And I need to do it on that kind of level. I need to have a stronger understanding. I'm thoroughly committed to the idea of producing my own work and others. So I want to just take this program. It's going to be something like 120 hours, and we'll see what happens out of that and who I meet and what kind of relationships we can build. I'm excited as heck. So
yeah, it'll give you a wonderful opportunity to make a lot of connections and networking in addition to everything that you're going to learn.
Yeah, I'm kind of aware that I'm a couple of hours north of the border. While I have two citizenships, I don't have a green card, so I can't just move to LA and start making the rounds. It has to be through Zoom or through some other form. And that's very much possible these days. You just have to have those initial conversations and get someone as excited about your work as you are. So, yeah.
And where can listeners find out more about you?
Twitter is a good place for me. My name is a little different. It's Catherine, CATHRYN, Atkinson. So I'm on Twitter. I am also on IMBD Pro and Coverfly. You can see a copy of Run Angelina if you're a filmmaker, and I'm on LinkedIn too, which I use for the industry. Trying to make my Instagram a little prettier too.
And listeners, if you want to connect with Catherine, you can find her on Twitter or LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It was great to have you on the show, Catherine. Thank you so much for taking time to be a guest on the Curious Professor podcast.
Thank you, Curious Professor.
And now for the answer to this episode's trivia question. Who made history in 2021 by earning the most Academy Award nominations for a woman in a single year? Filmmaker Chloe Zhao is the first woman to ever receive 4 Oscar nominations in a single year for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Editing. She was the second woman to ever earn an Academy Award for directing and the first woman of Asian descent to win the award. We'll end the show with something punny. What do Titanic and The Sixth Sense have in common? Icy dead people. Thank you for joining me for this episode of The Curious Professor Podcast. If there's a person, place, artifact, or natural wonder that has sparked your curiosity and you'd like for me to feature it on the show, please let me know. My website is thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe to the Curious Professor podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to become part of my community of curiosity seekers, be sure to visit my website, thecuriousprofessorpodcast.com, and join Dr. B's Hive. Until next time, always be learning and be curious with Dr. B.